Your cell phones.
Again, good morning, everyone, and welcome to ULT in Philadelphia. ULT means the United Lodge of Theosophists. And for your information, being in sympathy with the purpose of this lodge, as set forth in this declaration, I hereby record my desire to be enrolled as an associate. It being understood that such association calls for no obligation on my part, other than that which I myself determine, and that is to help spread broadcast the teachings of Theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. This wonderful little pamphlet you can pick up in the middle room or on the desk as you enter this room. As stated before, the policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy, and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim and purpose and teaching. Therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race or creed or sex, condition or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves, by study and otherwise, to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. As you will find on examining this little pamphlet, that there are two meetings a week. This morning, Sunday, we opened the doors at 10:30. We began promptly at 11, as you see, and we'll end at noontime. The topic for this morning, December the 17th, cycles of human evolution. On Wednesdays, we open the door at 5:15, so you can spend a couple hours in the front room library. There are always volunteers there to help you go over the lesson for that night or examine the textbooks that you will find there. And many of those same pamphlets and books are for sale in the middle room at a desk worked by another volunteer, whom you may ask any question as regards the work in these rooms. Now, that meeting begins on Wednesday at 7:30 and is over at 8:30. At the present time, we're studying In the Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. Classes are open to everyone, students and visitors alike. As was stated, you have any other questions regarding this wonderful little pamphlet, you may ask at the book table or the usher as you enter these rooms. As is our custom, we have a reading that proceeds today's class, which is a talk. And the reading is being taken from the Bhagavad Gita, called the Book of Devotion. And it's a dialogue between Krishna, Lord of Devotion, and Arjuna, Prince of India. Briefly, what end, O Krishna, doth that man attain, who, although having faith, has not attained to perfection in his devotion because his unsubdued mind wandered from the discipline? Doth he, fallen from both, like a broken cloud without any support, become destroyed, O strong-armed one, being deluded in the path of the Supreme Spirit? Thou, Krishna, shouldst completely dispel this doubt for me, for there is none other to be found able to remove it. Krishna's reply, such a man, O son of Pritha, doth not perish here or hereafter, for never to an evil place goeth one who doeth good. The man whose devotion has been broken off by death goeth to the regions of the righteous, where he dwells for an immensity of years and is then born again on earth in a pure and fortunate family, or even in a family of those who are spiritually illuminated. But such a rebirth into this life, as this last, is more difficult to obtain. Being thus born again, he comes in contact with the knowledge which belonged to him in his former body. And from that time, he struggles more diligently towards perfection, O son of Guru. For even unwittingly, by reason of that past practice, he is led and works on. Even if only a mere inquirer, he reaches beyond the word of the Vedas. But the devotee who, striving with all his might, obtaineth perfection because of efforts continued through many births, he goeth to the supreme goal. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry.
Friends, the subject of cycles of human evolution is an unimaginably immense one, if not for the reason that there is no beginning or ending to the process of human evolution. So we are going to focus together today on some basic ideas that we can carry with us to give us a fundamental understanding of the subject and look at a few of the interesting applications that it can have in the everyday lives of each and every one of us. And of course, much will be left for our time, for our questions and answers on that. So we're going to begin with universals, as is suggested many times. So we need to first grasp this idea that there is a universality to cycles and to the cyclic process of evolution. That means that the universe is a cycle of manifestation and rest. The word itself, universe, is derived from the word a cycle or a turning. And so we have these great periodic manifestations of the universe, called the in-breathing and the out-breathing, of Brahma in the east, the day and night of Brahma. And that becomes the model for all the various cycles of activity and rest we see within the solar system. The solar systems, the planets, human beings, the various species of animals and beings in the lower kingdoms, all subject to this same periodic law. But even the law of cyclic evolution is periodical. When universes and solar systems and planets and beings come forth again and again, they always come back a little more progressed, a little more developed physically, spiritually. So there is no beginning or ending to that cyclic upward progress of evolution. First idea. The second idea we keep in mind is as soon as we begin to think of a universal process of evolution affecting all worlds and all beings, physically and spiritually, we have to take with it into consideration the idea of reincarnation and karma. There needs to be a re-embodiment or re-expression of the substance that is used by the various forms. A re-expression of the substance through which the indwelling spirit and energy and intelligence can work through. And so reincarnation or re-embodiment, karma, the law of action and reaction, are also universal processes seen in all departments of nature, but are key to this idea of evolution. There can be no evolution unless there is a periodic destruction and regeneration of new worlds, new beings, based on the causes, the actions set up in the past. A third idea that we want to keep in mind is that evolution being cyclical, as we said, and progressive, does not proceed in a straight line from simple to most complex, from primitive to the most advanced. It is rather more like a spiral. Yes, there is a progression, but it's not straight line. And so we might say that evolution begins in spirit, descends into matter, and then we have the rising again into the spiritual level, each time a little higher, so there is a spiral. Mr. Judge refers to a certain section of track on the Pennsylvania Railroad that goes across the state, the great horseshoe turn. And at the bottom of the turn, as you enter the turn, you start at a point and then you rise through the spiral. And by the time you come out of the turn, you're at a higher level, a little more progressed. And evolution proceeds that way. There may be times of rising and falling, of advancement and slowing down, but each time the retreat is not quite as low and the advance is a little bit more. So as it says in the Bhagavad Gita, night and day or light and dark are the world's eternal ways. So these are just some of the universal concepts to keep in mind. So as we come down to the human level and we try to apply these general principles, the first thing we want to realize, being that it is a universal process, that cycles or the law of cyclic evolution works collectively on humanity and groups of humanity, and it also works on individual human beings. And we're going to say that it not only works on them, but it works through them. The distinction there being that cycles being a universal law, humanity individually and collectively is born along those cyclic processes of nature, just as a ship or a fleet of ships is born along the waves and the tides. It's sort of carried along in these cyclic processes. But it also works through individuals collectively also, in the sense that because we are individually and collectively humanity mind or thinking beings capable of free will and choice, we can influence the duration, impact, character, and coloration of the cycle. And so we're going to look at the ways both of these aspects of cycles work on as well as through humanity. So when we come down to the human being, there's a few ideas we want to keep in mind regarding our cyclic processes of evolution. The first one is the basic idea that the human being, like everything else in nature, is perfectible. That as these cycles come forth, affecting all of nature, lifting it up gradually, humanity itself is perfectible in its form, in its intelligence, in its spirituality. But we also are inherently perfectible because as self-conscious beings, we can recognize, identify, and bring willfully into action the divine principle that lies potentially in all beings. Our advantage, if you want to call it that, because it's also a responsibility, is that we can self-consciously recognize that universal divine principle within ourselves and independently choose how we are going to use it and bring about results. A second idea is because of this universality of this underlying principle, divine principle that connects all of life into one whole, there being no separateness, there is an indissoluble connection between the cycles that occur in nature and the cycles that occur in the human being individually and collectively. So we're going to see this more in a moment. The evolution, in other words, the evolution of the earth we live on, the planet we live on, proceeds in harmony, we might say, or in correspondence with the evolutionary progress and cycles of the human beings, in fact, all beings that develop on it. But for now, we're just going to focus at this interdependence and interrelationship between our cyclic progress as humanity and the evolution of the earth. So we said that there is this gradual process of evolution of the planet, just like everything else in the universe. And it begins in a stage that's very ethereal and spiritual, descends into matter, and then elevates or involutes out of, or evolutes out of that most dense stage and becomes more etheric again. A rise and a fall and a rise. And if we were going to look at its stages, its various stages along this process, we would see that at each stage there is a different degree of spirituality or materiality present on the earth. It's like taking a snapshot. And so we could say that there are predictable cyclical stages in the evolution of the earth through this great period of time. And each of these stages we're going to call, for our general purpose, a round. And also, just as the earth, humanity itself develops in this cyclical way, beginning very spiritual, becoming more material, and then becoming very spiritual again. And if we were to take a snapshot of its various stages of development, we would see at each stage the human race at that particular time shows a certain tendency or certain characteristics physically, mentally, and spiritually, just like the earth. And we're going to call for our purposes this morning these various successive stages of the human race. We're going to call them races or root races, but they're just the ways in which the humanity expresses itself physically, spiritually, and mentally at any particular time. The final idea we want to keep in mind before we go into more particular cases is that cycles of evolution work through human beings, not just on them, as with all the other departments of nature, where everything is sort of borne along like driftwood on a tide or on the waves. But humanity has a definite influence on the cyclic affairs, not only of human beings, obviously, but all the departments of nature, because of what is called in the philosophy the pivotal doctrine. That's because at a certain stage in the cyclic evolutionary process, mind or the thinking principle incarnates into the evolving human form, and now we have a spiritual being working through that physical form, guiding it through reason, self-consciousness, spiritual intuition, and free will. A combination of faculties that is not possible in the lower kingdoms. There's intelligence there, but not to that degree. And not only does the physical form develop, but those very capacities of intuition, of intelligence, of expression of will, what we call spirituality and intellectuality, develop also in an evolutionary way. So as we evolve and become wiser human beings, that impacts itself on the cycles that are experienced by ourselves and all the departments of nature, such that the various calamities and catastrophes and absurdities of the kingdoms of nature, the way they express themselves, the extinctions and appearances of kingdoms of nature, the various violent weather conditions, all are in a certain degree impacted by the collectivity of human thought and feeling. Likewise, those things affect us cyclically. So we're going to move from these universal concepts that we can take with us as guiding principles to wherever we are studying the process of cyclic evolution, and come down to perhaps some of the more interesting ways cycles affect human evolution, not just collectively, but individually. So we said that cycles work on humanity. That means they work on the races, meaning those different snapshots or stages of human progress. They work on civilizations, and they work on nations. These two have their cyclic rise and fall, their day and night. So in ancient times and in various literature, indeed in the philosophy itself, you see these various stages of the evolutionary rise and fall of the humanity as a race described as yugas or racial cycles, and they're symbolized as metals, each one of the metals characterizing the nature of humanity spiritually, intellectually, physically at that time, just as metals themselves have certain characteristics. So we speak of a golden age of humanity, a silver age of the humanity, a bronze age of humanity, and a Iron Age. And these immense racial cycles can extend up to millions of years. The Iron Age, which is the age we are currently in, is said to last 432,000 years. And that's the shortest cycle. And we are just 5,000 years into that cycle. But this is the cycle that's impacting us most, impacting most of humanity at this time. So it's important for us to at least recognize the main characteristics of this cycle. Just as if we put a piece of iron in our mouth, we could distinguish it from silver or bronze or gold. We would know from the taste and various other characteristics that we're dealing with iron. And so we need to know what kind of age we're dealing with. So this Iron Age has three characteristics that we want to be aware of. First of all, it is the most material of the ages, meaning that the physical form is the grossest, the thinking and the feeling are the most materialistic in character for most of humanity. That means the desire principle, particularly in its lower selfish manifestations, is predominant. And the spiritual faculties are more obscured for the majority of humanity. That's one of the characteristics of the Iron Age, the materiality of the age. The second aspect is that cause leads to effect, or reaction follows the cause much more quickly than at other times. So if we put our hand into a fire, the action is very quick. We can do other things, such as eat the wrong foods or smoke cigarettes, for example, that can have harmful effects, but the results come much more slowly, the effect. But we are living in the time when all the effects of our actions, good, bad, or indifferent, come a lot more quickly than they do in a slower moving age. And while that produces a lot of change and rapid transition from older forms and to newer forms, politically, culturally, socially, economically, creates a lot of chaos and confusion around us because it is such a rapidly moving transition time. It's also an advantage for the individual working in that time because they can set up causes, better causes, spiritual causes, if you will, that they will receive more quickly than in a slower moving time. So an individual can make progress quicker in the Iron Age than they can in a slower moving Golden Age. And in turn, the efforts they make to help others, the seeds they plant to grow and help others and feed others, grow more quickly than they would in a different season of human evolution. So the results of our actions to help others as well as ourselves bear fruit quicker. So these then are the three ideas we want to keep in mind regarding to the yugas or the cycles. But the cycles not only affect humanity as a race, but they also affect civilizations and nations. And this is a very interesting study. In the philosophy, we talk about the reincarnation of the ego, the thinker, and collectivity, groups of egos or thinkers. And there is a general average of time between the incarnation of the ego on the physical plane in a human form and personality, and the time, the duration that ego spends outside or disembodied from a human form in one of the after-death states. And the general time average for this particular period is that of 1,000 to 1,500 years. so that if individuals, and more importantly, collections of egos living at a certain time, in a certain point of history, with a certain achievement and certain tendency and certain lessons learned, incarnate together in certain 1500 year cycles, they bring back with them those tendencies, those lessons, and add to it the results that have been achieved up to that point. So we can go back and study the history and the affairs of humanity, the interactions and relationships between nations and civilizations, and see correspondences and analogies that occur in the affairs of these nations and civilizations today as they were perhaps 1,500 years ago or 1,500 years before that. It's a very interesting cycle because it allows us to see, if you know your past, it's a great advantage to know your past. And if you don't know your past, you're in sort of trouble because you don't know how to deal with the present and you're going to make the same mistakes for the future. So knowing where you've come from, what you, the baggage and the gifts you bring with you, is a great advantage collectively in moving forward. Another thing, another way we are affected collectively as a civilization, we spoke earlier how there is a great interdependence between all the departments of nature and a correspondence between the cycles that occur in the heavens, the solar system and the sun, and also the cycles that occur on Earth. And this is, in a sense, the scientific basis, the philosophical basis for astrology or understanding the zodiac. The zodiac is like a great celestial clock. But instead of having the markings of the face of the clock marked out with numbers and a minute hand going around, instead of that minute hand of going around, we have the progression of the orbit of the sun moving through the various constellations of the zodiac, of which there are 12, just as the minute hand moves around the clock. And at every point in that cycle, there is an association with certain affairs going on in the condition of humanity. And those that know how to read that clock can predict or know when certain cyclic affairs will reoccur. So we're at 11:30 now. We know that sometime around in the next hour or so, most of us, if we've lived a certain way, are going to begin to get some stomach grumblings and maybe get hungry, maybe later. But there's a certain... Now, we're not saying that the clock on the wall made us hungry, but it is a way to know that sometime in the next hour or so, we can expect to be hungry. And in another 12 hours, we'll probably be tired enough that we're ready to go to sleep. So in the same way, those that understand those cycles can see that certain affairs are coming. And so if we take the rotation of the sun through the various constellations, that's a cycle of 25,000 years approximately. It's called the sidereal year. And if we divided every one of those cycles into 12, the 12, it would come into an individual cycle for each sign of the zodiac of about 2,100 years. So sometime around the end of the 19th century, we moved from the sign of Pisces into the sign, or the, quote, age of Aquarius. Aquarius being a water sign, and water is symbolic of the psychic nature. And so those who understand the affairs of humanity have written and said that in this coming cycle, especially in the West, we are going to see a rising up of the psychic nature in all ways. Some will be positive, some will be negative. And for those of us who have observed the history of the development of the psychic tendencies throughout the 20th century, see many evidences of psychic abuses and uses. And by psychic, we're not just speaking of exotic occult practices or magic or telekinesis or interested in seances or psychic phenomena. We're also talking about the basic psychic human nature full of desire and passion and influences from our sensations. So we see that, plus we talked about the age of transition. We also see in this time a cycle of development, because the various races develop in rhythm with this sidereal cycle, that beginning now, especially in the West, we are in an age where there is a preparation for the appearance of a new racial form for humanity, a new combination, a new mixture of humanity developing here in the West, the Americas, North, South, Central, especially, that will represent a new development spiritually, morally, ethically, physically than ever existed before. And how do you get a new mixture? Well, you take some of this and you take some of that and you blend it all together. And from all the various ingredients, you get a new form that is better or uses the best from each and all. And so here in the Americas especially, we see this melting pot of individuals from nations and civilizations all over the world, bringing their tendencies, and in a period within a relatively few hundred years, producing a temperament, an activity, a talent that exists nowhere else at this particular time. In other ages, it took place in another part of the world. But right now, since the next great period of evolution will advance on this continent, we see this great period of mixture and amalgamation or formation of a new cycle. And so we see that all around us as well. So a great mixture of cultures. So having looked at it collectively, we're just going to mention, because it's really a lead-in to our group discussion, some of the individual expressions of the cycles in our lives. There's, of course, individually we feel it as the cyclic return of impressions and sensations. So there's a rise and a fall. We can study ourselves, and the modern term is the biorhythms. But if we take note ourselves, keep a little diary, a monthly diary, you can not only see changes in our mood, but changes in our physical capacity, in our spiritual capacity, in our moral capacity. We see little cyclic rises and falls, and we're, in a sense, we're predictable. Yes, we're predictable, but remember, cycles also work through us. And if we recognize a good cycle coming, a strong cycle, we can work with it and develop it. If we see a negative tendency coming forth and expect it, we're prepared. And so we know to resist it or let it come through us without resisting it, without giving it more energy, instead planting new seeds that will develop in the future instead. So how does this affect us? Well, we can develop new character tendencies and traits. We can pick the best times of the day to study and meditate if we know when our certain cycle of intellectual and spirituality is at peak, or we can train ourselves to be optimally effective at a certain time. We can also, if we understand when we are at our peak and working with nature the best morally and spiritually, we can begin to make promises and make efforts to reform ourselves during those times. And that's going to be very relevant to us in the next few weeks as we discuss how the cycle of nature at this time is optimal for us to begin to make moral, spiritual, and intellectual progress. So all these things are part of the cycles the subject of the cycles of human evolution. And we're going to stop here because the subject actually could go on for the rest of our lives and probably should, but not this morning at least. So we invite your questions and comments on this subject. Yes?
Well, based on some of the history we were just given, aren't we lucky? We're the returning fall of the Roman Empire creatures. What can we do with this knowledge? We can't change everything.
Well, in the West here especially, although it's in Europe and other parts of the country, other parts of the world, we see the returning of certain tendencies. And we think it's interesting that we see here the intersection of two streams from the past. We certainly see the more recent, relatively, in the perspective of human history, the more recent influence of the Egyptian line and the Roman line coming forth. But we also see the returning of the Atlantean. And the Atlantean were very advanced, what we would call technologically. They really understood the powers of nature, not just psychically, but also materially. And they were very advanced in that way. Well, as egos, we took part in those civilizations, and at times we come forth, we bring forth those tendencies. So we have here in the West and in Europe, the West we mean that part of the world, not just geologically separated from the East, but also ideologically and culturally distinct from the East. We have here in the West these influences, but because of the great technology we have, we can't do anything in this part of the world without it influencing some group or in the East. And likewise, we cross-pollinate, we cross-influence each one. So our influence here in the West spreads out all over the world, just as the Eastern influences, the spiritual and influences of the East, are pervading through and influencing Western culture. So we are at a great time of advantage to recognize what is coming forth, but with it becomes the responsibility of us being self-conscious, willful beings, able to discern and discriminate what is right and wrong, and choose from a variety of options what is the best to do. And then the more we understand from what is coming from us from the past, the more we can better choose how to act in the future. And so that's the whole practical value for humanity as a group from this doctrine. But even no matter what happens collectively, as individuals, we are still responsible for our own actions and can determine our own future. In the back.
We heard a statement, where every failure is success. Repeat the failures and become full of success. Mm-hmm. And that's simply not something that we hear every day in our education.
Well, it is said to err as human. We might also add to err many times as human. And we've been erring many times for many incarnations, which is why it's so difficult for us to make changes. We carry a lot of karmic consequences. Some of those will take time to work themselves out. But at any point, as we said, we can recognize the error of our ways, and it is also human to make changes for the better. That's where the doctrine of reincarnation gives us that sense not only of responsibility and hope for the future. Much of the work we do today is not just for ourselves now, but for the benefit for ourselves and others that we can experience in the future under the operation of this law of cyclic evolution. It gives us a place, a role in this universe and in our affairs with nature. You had your hand up.
Yeah. So, I don't know if this is a question or more so just like the interjecting of a perspective, but I do very much so believe that we're at a time where psychic energy is becoming much more available to people, and we're coming from a time, the time space matrix, where it was actually almost bound up physically, and the psychic faculties were subdued so greatly that I believe that when you said, like, we are vessels for evolution, we're vessels for change, I really do believe there is a whole generation of people around my age who are coming in to more set a base frequency for beings that are here to actually, like, match that frequency. And I say this because I went to high school, like 7th and Market, and I've never been around as many people that were that, like, psychically inclined in my life. Like, I would be around people, and literally they would start talking to me about, like, remembering me from past lives. There was one girl where she actually lost her boyfriend, and out of nowhere, she's talking to me about how she just remembers, like, me healing her in the past life, and she remembers me being, like, a priestess, and, like, she's talking about things that I read later in, like, the Hermetica, and she's talking about things that are so innately what we could would consider psychic, or we would consider kept away from us, that, like, we're almost finding it in these old texts. But it's almost like it's sewn into us so oddly.
If you can just take your contribution there, and then if you had a question follow-up, we can do that. But to take your valuable contribution there, we mentioned before that in the Americas, we have the preparation for the next amalgamation and presentation of the human condition, one that's going to be more advanced than we are now, not just physically, but intellectually, mentally, and psychically. That's evolution. That's evolution, improvement, development. And it's beginning now. And in correspondence with that, more and more egos are incarnating now, bringing with, because of the development of the race, are able to express the things that they developed in Atlantis. So let's say you were a musical genius in some of your past lives, but you were incarnated into the Middle Ages, a family in the Middle Ages, where most of your life was spent surviving and very little contact with any kind of musical instrument. You can only express that in a very little way. But if you're a musical genius from the past and you incarnate in a family that's got musical talent and money and very culturally connected, well, you have a greater instrument to expand. So with this development, slow development of the human condition here in the West, we see incarnating more and more souls expressing at very early ages psychic ability, greater intellectual ability, greater technical ability, and also greater connection with their senses. And that can be good or bad. More sensitivity to their senses and passions. All these things were attributes of Atlantis, but now they come into it and express it at very early ages. So we see more people who are talented and gifted and can express those ideas at younger ages than we see it now. And those of us who have been coming to the lodge for 20, 30, 40, 50 years are continuously amazed at the older people, old souls in young bodies who come forth and have such a quick grasp and of the ideas and can understand them quicker than many from the older, quote, generations. Yes.
Wouldn't it be a little bit easier if we kind of had an instruction manual? I mean, they say the parents aren't given one when they have children, but we, as thinkers, why aren't we given one? Mm-hmm. So we had a bit of an expectation of what we should learn from something.
We do have an instruction manual, and we read from one of them at the beginning of this class. We spoke of the Kali Yuga, the Iron Age, which is about 5,000, about 5,000 years of it right now. It began at the time of the death of Krishna, according to the Hindu calculations. Krishna being regarded as an avatar, a divine incarnation, one of a long series of divine incarnations of spiritual beings who come at a certain time, like he says, when the certain conditions of humanity are present, to set a keynote, to sound a bell, to give a teaching that will be a guiding principle or basis for the cycle to come. And so we find in his teachings, a keynote of a few lessons that are very valuable for this Kali Yuga that we live in. It is a time of activity, of expression on the physical plane, of energy, of performance of action and duty, which is most characterized in the image of the warrior. Not just the warrior who's fighting on the field of a battle, but the warrior priest, the warrior student, the warrior soul. Anyone who has to fight against the prevailing conditions of the time. And as the prevailing conditions of the time are very much opposed to our spiritual and moral nature, we all, as human beings, are in the same condition of warrior souls trying to recognize the influence of our lower nature and control it and overcome it. And so the Bhagavad Gita is a field manual for the, quote, warrior soul, but in such a way that we can live peacefully and constructively and harmoniously with the world and around us and yet maintain our conviction. That is why Mahatma Gandhi was so illuminated by it and developed his stance of nonviolent opposition or nonviolent resistance, which was later adopted by other civil rights leaders in other countries, in this one, of course, and in Europe. So we have that manual for us in the various devotional books. Yes?
From this conversation, you're saying that the universe is constantly in motion, it's constantly in change, and that change is like the only thing we can really rely on, because everything will change. Where is the basis of this change, this vibration? It comes from something, it doesn't come from nothing. So we have all these changes that we go through. What is the source of all that?
Well, if we go back to that field manual we talked about, the Bhagavad Gita, it speaks there in chapter 8 of the idea that all worlds up to Brahma, or the first universal expression of the totality of the universe, are subject to rebirth or cycles, periods of activity and rest. But it's not just the change spoken of, it's a cyclical process of change. Things just don't repeat themselves again and again, but they repeat themselves in ever-perfecting expressions. What is behind this spiritual impulse, what is behind this spiritual impulse that moves everything forward and is felt by human beings in their divine, in their self-consciousness, is the divine principle. It is not a being outside of ourselves, but a oneness, a wholeness, a reality that is everywhere present in everything, beyond everything, beginningless, endless, the source of all change, and yet itself changeless, containing the vehicle, or the rather the foundation of all things, and all things existing it in itself, and yet it is not a thing, a finite thing. It's hard for us to grasp the reality of that one universal divine principle in our minds because our minds are finite. But we can adopt certain, we can hold on to certain images that awaken our spiritual intuition so we can intuitively grasp the reality. And that is the image of the idea of space. Just as all these cycles of activity, everything comes and goes within space, space is not changed or affected by anything that comes or goes within it. It is, was, and will ever be. It is the end and the foundation of all things. Well, that deific principle is eternal and ever-present, all-pervading, as is space. Deity cannot be less than space. And if we add to that idea the idea of ceaseless motion, vibration, energy, which is everywhere present, no beginning or end to it, we also get the idea of that one principle, which is the root, the driving impulse for everything that is. And it's in all things, and it connects all things, and we all are part of it. We are all divine and can express that in our own individual lives according to the particular stage of evolution that we are in. Some of us are in different stages than others, but we all have the potential to make ourselves better able to express that reality at any time. Did you have your hand up?
Well, we were just wondering about race. Is there any connection between color and race, or ethnic background and race, or is it just a generic term?
Well, race, as we are using it in the philosophy, refers to the average and majority condition of humanity at this time. Eastern, Western, Northern, Southern, and we can see within that large collection there are families of what we call races, but these are more minor distinctions on the physical plane. We have people with different expressions of coloration, but that has very little to do with our commonality as human beings on the spiritual, mental, and moral and emotional planes, where we are more alike than we are different. So it gets us away from a very superficial notion of race, just as the ideas get us away from a very superficial understanding of who we are as human beings. We are more than just these physical bodies, so humanity is more than just the expression of any physical feature. And it is that inner part that is constantly evolving and developing that is more important, is more influential, it matters more to our condition in this life than any outer physical feature. So we're going to stop here, but this whole subject, this whole umbrella subject of cycles and cyclic law will continue next week, because we're coming to the message of the Christian symbols, which as we will see, are very relevant to the cyclic conditions of the earth and humanity at this time, spiritually, mentally, and psychically. And we'll see more of those connections in our subject. This Wednesday, we are taking up the fourth principle in humanity, the one that we said which is most predominant and most influential, good or bad, in our particular age and transition, that of the desire principle, the principle of passion and desire. And so it's a very important principle as well as a very important class. So we welcome you to join us again for those meetings, but our meeting for today is adjourned. Thank you.